Let's go ahead and open our Bibles to 2 Kings chapter 14, verse 7, and talk a little bit more about the rise of King Amaziah of the southern kingdom of Judah. He comes to power after his father was assassinated. And once he gets control of his kingdom, he executes those assassins and then begins his reign. And we are told that he is a good man at the beginning of his reign, that he did what was right. He did allow the high places to exist away from Jerusalem. But other than that, he seemed to have been on the right track. Now, he does something that is described in the singular verse of 2 Kings 14:7 as a punishment campaign or a retribution campaign against the Edomites. And even though there's not tons of detail, I think the information we have indicates that there must have been some sort of sneak attack on Judah by the Edomites. So 2 Kings 14:7 describes the campaign thus. He struck down 10,000 Edomites in the Valley of Salt and took Selah by storm and called it Jokthiel, which is its name to this day. So the prophet writer who's writing this explains this is how Jokthiel in Edom got its new name. Now, the name Selah means rock. And so there are many commentators and Bible teachers, Bible students, and I count myself among them, that believe this is actually an old name for the city of Petra in the country of Jordan today. And one of the things that really distinguishes, gives a unique look to the city of Petra, is that there is this canyon with very steep walls and a very narrow area between those walls. In fact, you see it in some of the movies that have been filmed there. The one that I always remember the most is Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. It's toward the tail end of the movie. You see this narrow canyon. Well, the canyon walls there are about 300 feet tall, I believe. And that comes up in the description of the execution of these 10,000 Edomites after the war was over. That's over in 2 Chronicles 25. 2 Chronicles 25, 11. But Amaziah took courage, and he led out his people and went to the Valley of Salt. Now that's the valley called the Dead Sea Valley. So the way you get from Judea to Edom is to cross the southern part of the Dead Sea Valley. And so he went to the Valley of Salt, and he struck down 10,000 men of Seir. The men of Judah captured another 10,000 alive and took them to the top of, guess what? Selah, the rock, and threw them down from the top of the rock, and they were all dashed to pieces. So it would appear, if we're correct, that this is Petra, that after the war was over, they took 10,000 Edomite POWs to the top of where that narrow canyon is and tossed them through and down to the bottom as a means of execution. Now, why would they do that? We know that in other stories, the Israelis were supposed to release POWs back to their home country after the war was completed, after the peace treaty was entered into. But if there was some sort of criminal activity that the other side had engaged in, there would be executions. And so I think this is probably the reason for the execution of 10,000 guys is because they were involved in the presumed sneak attack upon Judah. All right, the next item is in verse 13. And you might remember that when King Amaziah had decided he was going to attack Edom, he had hired a bunch of Israeli mercenaries to join him, that is, people from the northern kingdom of Israel. And then he got chewed out about that by a prophet, and he had to just write the money off. And it was a lot of money. But the soldiers, the Israeli soldiers, were ticked off about the fact that even though their government got that money, they were not going to get the ability to take war booty, because after a war had been fought, the losing side had to give up a lot of their equipment and their supplies and their material to the victorious side. And the individual soldiers actually got kind of an end-of-war bonus by that. So these Israeli mercenaries were really mad that they didn't have the opportunity to make some cash. And so once the Judean army went down to Edom to fight their war, this is what happened. Verse 13, but the men of the army whom Amaziah sent back, not letting them go with him to battle, raided the cities of Judah from Samaria to Beth Horon, and they struck down 3,000 people in them and took much spoil. So they were like, fine, you Judeans don't want us to go to battle with you? We'll take our battle trophies from your people. And so they just went from town to town, and in most cases, it seems like they just took stuff. But when there was resistance, they killed some people. They killed about 3,000 people and took a whole bunch of booty back to their homes up in northern Israel. So, verse number 14. After Amaziah came from striking down the Edomites, he brought the gods of the men of Seir and set them up as his gods and worshiped them, making offerings to them. And I am totally flabbergasted by this. I don't understand what was going through his head. Up until this moment in his kingdom, he was counted as a good, righteous man. But suddenly, after defeating the Edomites, he confiscates some of their idols and brings them back to Jerusalem, sets them up, and starts worshiping them. And it makes no sense. And the prophet sent from God shows that it makes no sense. Therefore, he who is was angry with Amaziah, sent to him a prophet who said to him, why have you sought the gods of a people who did not deliver their own people from your hand? So, are you kidding me? Their idols, their little gods, couldn't save them from you. Why are you bringing these idols back up here and worshiping them as if they can help you out? Verse 16, but as this prophet was speaking, the king said to him, have we made you a royal counselor? Stop. Why should you be struck down? So Amaziah looks this prophet in the eye as he's saying, are you being stupid, taking the gods of a defeated people and making them your gods? And he says, shut up. Nobody made you my advisor. Do you want to get yourself killed? And when a king threatens to kill you, that's a pretty serious threat. So the prophet stopped talking to him. He says, I know that God has determined to destroy you because you have done this and have not listened to my counsel. So the prophet is like, fine, I'm not going to talk to you anymore because God's going to take you down. So what good does it do me to talk to you? I believe this marks the beginning of the bad years of King Amaziah. If I'm correct that this is 794 BC, then he's been on the throne for a little over 13 years, I think, something like that. And now he's gone bad. And he's lost all judgment. Because here's the next part of the story. Verse 17. Then Amaziah, king of Judah, took counsel. So he won't listen to the counsel from a prophet, but he will listen to the counsel of his buddies. And so he took counsel, and then he sent to Joash, or Jehoash, the son of Jehoahaz, the son of Jehu. So he's the third king in northern Israel since Jehu wiped out the Ahab-Jezebel line. And so he sends this message up to northern Israel. Come, let us look one another in the face. Now, part of this may be that he's ticked off about how the Israeli mercenaries killed 3,000 of his people and took a whole bunch of booty. That's probably prompting some of this. But there's something said that may indicate an additional issue at this time. Listen to this, verse 18. Joash, the king of Israel, sent word back to Amaziah, king of Judah. A thistle on Lebanon, that is on the Lebanon mountain range, which was always, you know, a significant landmark north of Israel. A thistle of Lebanon, so a little bitty plant, sent to the cedar on Lebanon. Remember the cedars of Lebanon? We should think of them like our redwoods. Saying, give your daughter to my son for a wife. Now this is where the other thing comes into the picture. Now, if I am correct, and this is 794 BC, that just so happens to be the year of the birth of Amaziah's son, a man that we'll know later as Uzziah. His other name is Azariah. And so it is possible, I'm just theorizing here, throwing it out for you to chew on, it is possible that Amaziah, with his brand new baby boy, goes against the king of northern Israel and says, hey, your mercenaries did a lot of damage down here. Let's enter into some sort of peace treaty, and you can just declare right now that one of your daughters will marry my brand new baby son when he becomes of age. That's how we'll work this out. And so that's, I think, what the king of northern Israel is responding to, is like, who do you think you are setting terms of my daughter has to marry your son? So he puts it into this little fable. A little tiny thistle says to the great big cedar tree, you're going to marry your daughter to my son. And so then the next part of the parable or the fable is this. And then a wild beast, a random animal of Lebanon, passed by and trampled down the thistle, right? Just kind of stomped it into the ground. Well, verse 19, the application. you say to yourself, see, I've struck down Edom, and your heart is lifted up in you with boastfulness, and now you just need to stay at home. Why should you provoke trouble so that you fall, you and Judah with you? So basically, King Jehoash says, you don't want to come up here, buddy. You don't want to come against me. I will stomp you into the ground. Just stay at home. Well, he's not going to let that happen. Amaziah would not listen. Listen to the prophet writer's commentary here. For it was of God in order that he might give him into the hand of their enemies because they had sought the gods of Edom. See, that's why we're reading from the Second Chronicles passage, because this is the place that ties it into his worship of the Edomite idols that he brought back. So God has decided he needs to learn a hard lesson. And so Joash, king of Israel, went up, and he and Amaziah, king of Judah, faced one another in a battle at Beth Shemesh, which belongs to Judah. Now, Beth Shemesh is down, it's at the northern opening for the Valley of Elah. It's in the transition zone from the plains of the Mediterranean, the area of the Philistines, up into the Judean hill country west of Jerusalem. And so this is where the battle engages between the forces of northern Israel and the forces of southern Judah. And this is how it goes. Judah was defeated by Israel, and every man fled to his home. So they got their clocks cleaned. And it wasn't just that. Joash, king of Israel, actually captured Amaziah, king of Judah, the son of Joash, son of Ahaziah, at Beth Shemesh. So the idolatrous King Amaziah, the braggadocious King Amaziah, loses in this battle at Beth Shemesh, and he gets captured, and he is taken back to his capital city. They brought him to Jerusalem. He will be released, but he will be released on the understanding that he needs to behave himself and not try to pull this garbage against the Israeli people ever again, because they broke down the wall of Jerusalem for 400 cubits, that's 600 feet. From the Ephraim Gate, probably located somewhere just north of the Temple Mount, maybe a little bit west of that north. And then 400 cubits or 600 feet west from there was the corner gate. The corner gate marked the place where the north wall turned to follow the west wall of Jerusalem, of Solomon's New Jerusalem. And that western wall followed what used to be a valley down to the northwest corner of the ancient city of Jerusalem, that oval down there to the south of the Temple Mount. And it would have hooked in right around what was called the Valley Gate. So effectively, the Israelis break down half of the northern wall of Jerusalem. Just leave it open. And this happened a lot in the ancient world of walled cities. It was the victor reminding the loser, I can come back in here anytime I want, so you better behave. We're still not done. Verse 24. And he seized all the gold and silver and all the vessels that were found in the house of God. So he raids the temple treasuries in the care of Obed-Edom. Obed-Edom is an interesting name. It means the servant of Edom. And so it actually might be a title for a position there in the city of Jerusalem. And it will show up again later in the story of Jerusalem. So all of the stuff that Obed-Edom was in responsible for, that gets taken. He seized also the treasuries of the king's house. So he takes stuff from the royal treasuries and also hostages. So he takes some of the kids, probably family members of the royal household and of related families to the royal household, leaders within the administration. And then he returned to Samaria. So the southern kingdom of Judah is basically now tributary for a bit to the northern kingdom of Israel. Then, in 793, so by my chronology, the following year, Jehoash, the king of northern Israel, dies. And so that is recorded in 2 Kings 14:15. Now, the rest of the acts of Jehoash that he did and his might and how he fought with Amaziah, king of Judah, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel? Yes, they are. We just read it. And Jehoash slept with his fathers and was buried in Samaria with the kings of Israel, and Jeroboam his son reigned in his place. And then you have to skip down to verse 23 to find out about this new guy. In the 15th year of Amaziah, the son of Joash, king of Judah, so that's why we know it's 793 BC, Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel, began to reign in Samaria, and he reigned 41 years. So he has a good, long time on the throne. And we sometimes refer to him as Jeroboam the Second, because you remember the first king of northern Israel, his name was Jeroboam. Now, I believe chronologically that just a few years later, in 790, the young boy, Azariah, was to be declared the crown prince of Judah, because some of his kingdom numbers seem to start from that year. And then his dad gets assassinated. And that story is told in 2 Kings 14:17. Amaziah, the son of Joash, king of Judah, lived 15 years after the death of Jehoash, son of Jehoahaz, king of Israel. So we already read about the death of the northern king. And so this puts it in 778 BC. Now, the rest of the deeds of Amaziah, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Judah? And this is how he died. They made a conspiracy against him in Jerusalem, and he fled to Lachish. Lachish is to the southwest from the city of Jerusalem. It's a walled city. So apparently they hated him a lot. And actually, it's probably related to his foolishness that got a bunch of people killed in the battle. And then we end up with the tributary status to the northern kingdom. And they had enough of him and they wanted him gone. So his own people killed him. Then they bring the body back, verse 20. They brought him on horses, and then he was buried in Jerusalem with his fathers in the city of David. So he gets put into the royal sepulchers, into the royal tomb area that's on the southeast side of the most ancient part of Jerusalem, the city of David. Then all the people of Judah took Azariah, who was 16 years old. So he's a kid still. And they made him king instead of his father, Amaziah. So they want to give this kid a chance to be their new king. And one of the first things that we hear that he does is that he built Eilat and restored it to Judah after the king slept with his fathers. Eilat is the port there on the north end of the Gulf of Aqaba. It is an access point to the Red Sea. And so it was destroyed back in the time of Jehoshaphat and his son when they were messing around with the northern kingdom, and it was destroyed by a windstorm. Well, now it's being refurbished and probably being rededicated to use as a launching point for a trade route again. Let's finish with 2 Chronicles 26 description of the character of this king, Azariah. Chapter 26, 2 Chronicles, all the people of Judah took Uzziah, that's his other name, who was 16 years old, made him king instead of his father, Amaziah. He rebuilt Eilat, restored it to Judah. Uzziah was 16 years old when he began to reign. He reigned 52 years in Jerusalem, the longest one. His mother's name was Jechaliah of Jerusalem, and he did what was right in the eyes of he who is, according to all that his father Amaziah had done. That is, back when he was a good guy. And so that's our new king when we come back and tell the next story when we get into the Word.